the Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, Texans lose yesterday 24-22. I hesitate to say they let this one get away. I thought they were lucky to be hanging around in this game. Kudos to the defense for giving the offense the opportunities it gave them. The offense failed this team yesterday, specifically the offensive line. We'll talk plenty about them, I'm sure, as we relive some of the magic of this game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. So let's take you through some of the twists and turns yesterday. We will acknowledge people at 7:20-ish on the show today, so stay tuned for that. But man, yesterday's loss to the Packers sets up a big one against the Colts. Colts win yesterday against the Dolphins sets up a big one this weekend at NRG. We'll talk about that later as well. So let's start yesterday. This started early. This was good to see. Big question coming into the game: how is this linebacking crew going to perform? No Azeez Alshire, no Henry Toa-Toa. And right off the bat, Jalen Petrie, quasi-linebacker, half linebacker, half safety, but Neville Hewitt, replacement linebacker, combine on a big play.
Hanson close to the line. Love takes the snap, fires, and it's picked off. Hewitt to his left, 40, 30, 20, cutting inside the 20 of Green Bay, and Neville's got the ball inside the 15-yard line on the pick.
So that was big, man, and that was, you know, D'Amico always talks about starting fast. You cannot start any faster than that.
No, that was a very fast start, Sean.
Interception, damn near a pick six from Neville Hewitt, sets you up with room service in the red zone, and the crowd gets the air taken out of it right away.
And it was one of the reasons that I had predicted this game would be 22-21, which that was the score for a little while. I thought it was going to be 22-21 Packers, but one of the big factors in that was that Jordan Love makes some just curiously horrendous decisions.
Yeah.
And Neville Hewitt, to his credit, was there to capitalize on it. But, man, Jordan Love, it's frustrating because he does some really smart things. Really, really smart things. But when it comes to the judgment side of things, he's boneheaded at times.
Yeah.
So and the Texans capitalized on it.
Yeah. I think yesterday's game, these are two really good football teams overall. Like, I know the Texans, we're mad about the Texans this morning, and the offensive line certainly is not emblematic of what the rest of the team is here. The offensive line stinks right now. I thought we saw with these two teams that are considered, I think, at worst, fringe Super Bowl contenders, if not actual Super Bowl contenders, I think we saw in full view what could keep them from getting to the Super Bowl. And for the Texans, it's the offensive line. And for the Packers, it's Jordan Love's carelessness with the football sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think those are the Achilles heels of these two teams. Now, you mentioned that we see some good things from Jordan Love as well, like this touchdown pass to Kraft here to put the Packers on the board.
On third and four, Love shotgun throwing over the middle, and it's caught. Touchdown. It looked like a Texan had a shot at a pick, but Kraft came down with it in the end zone as the Packers take the lead.
Yeah, it was Kalen Bullock shot at that.
Hit a real, and that was another one. It was with Jordan Love. It's there's a little bit of a Jameis Winston effect where some of his really nice throws look a lot like his really bad throws. Yeah. I think that Kalen Bullock with a millisecond better anticipation on that,
maybe,
because there was nothing duped or silly about it. I mean, they were just sitting back there in zone, and he made the read on it, but he just wasn't quite quick enough. Yeah, that's where I think a year from now, Kalen Bullock might make that play. But the Packers are really good at spreading you out and getting their opportunities.
No doubt. So the Texans get the ball back. Now they're down 7-3, and it's early in the second quarter. They go 3-and-out. So now it's looking like this could be a game that starts to teeter a little bit. You're giving the Packers the ball back up 7-3. They've got a little momentum in this game. They're 3-and-out, and the Packers give the Texans a complete gift.
And here's Tommy launching. Nixon backpedaling inside the 20, and he's going to let this one bounce. And it takes a bounce down to the 16-yard line, and a big scrum for it. Texans think that the Packers touched it. Let's see.
Texans could very well
Texans
have
say
this.
They have it, and they do. They've got the ball. A muff punt by Green Bay. They touched it. Texans have it. MJ Stewart comes out of the pack with the rock.
And they would go on to score a couple plays later. Joe Mixon, they just leaned on Joe Mixon down there. Ran him.
Yeah, that was back in the glory days of the Texans, back where they were running the ball really well in the first half.
Glory days of the second quarter, exactly. Mm-hmm. Packers get the ball back. They go down. They score a touchdown to go up 14-10. Jordan Love hits Wicks. That was the sequence where there was the incomplete pass that looked like a lateral that D'Amico didn't challenge. And then the very next play, the Packers go over the top of D'Angelo Ross, which looked like it was partially on Ross, but also on it was cover two, so Kalen Bullock didn't get over there in time as well. So either way, it was bad. Packers go up 14-10. And then, look, if you can't move the football, you may need to get some of those invisible yards on special teams. Damian Pierce did them a solid on the ensuing kickoff.
McManus with the kickoff. It's going to be short. Inside the 5, taken by Pierce. Over the 5, 10, 15, cutting right, 20, 25 to the 30. Now cutting left. He's got a little room. 35, headed for the left sideline, 40, and ridden down at the 43-yard line. Nice return. Damian Pierce, no flags.
Yeah, so this is when they get the ball at the Green Bay, or they get the ball at the Texans 43, so they start with good field position. And then they lean a lot on the short passing game and Joe Mixon to kind of move the ball into Green Bay territory. Ultimately, they stall out. Jaime Fairbairn kicks a 52-yard field goal, and the Texans cut the lead to 14-13. Then the ensuing possession, Jordan Love throws another present here.
Love, play action. Love with some heat on, fires downfield, and intercepted! Bullock has it at the 45-yard line down there. Second pick of the game for the Houston Texans.
Very first play after the field goal to make it 14-13, Kalen Bullock with an incredibly athletic interception, Seth. That was he earned that one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that is like Kalen Bullock, my previous comments notwithstanding, there's so much upside with him. There's just so much upside. It's just a matter of him getting reps. Like, he'll be a better player by the end of the season than he is right now, and he's doing some really promising things right now.
Yep. So they lean on Joe Mixon again heavily, including a big 32-yard run by Mixon on 2nd and 6, a second play after the interception. They go down. They get another Mixon touchdown. They go into the locker room up 19-14 at the half. The sequence at the beginning of the half, man, I think a lot of times you can look at that, Seth, and say, oh, okay, this is where the adjustments are made. You know, you make adjustments at halftime. The Texans have been, I've been trying to tally up during the show here just how bad they've been offensively in the second half of games, and it's depressing to look at. I think it says it all maybe about where this coaching staff was yesterday, that the Texans come out of the locker room up 19-14. They get the ball to start the second half. So you got a chance, at the very least, you got a chance with Jaime Fairbairn's leg to put you up 8 in this game. It's one score, but it's the maximum one score. If not, maybe correct some things at halftime. Keep riding Joe Mixon and go down and get a touchdown. And now there's real game pressure on the Packers. Now they can't lean on that run game anymore either as much. They got to let Jordan Love throw the ball. And that's when, I won't say that's when good things happen, but it's when good things had been happening in this game thus far. He threw 2 picks in the first half. Instead, they go 3 and out. The Packers get the ball back and go on a drive where they don't even get to 3rd down. They convert on 2nd down every time. Like, that's how chunky that drive was in terms of plays. And they go down and they get a touchdown that puts them ahead 21-19. And that was the score until there were zeros on the clock at the end of the game. Like, the defense has ruled the day after that.
Yeah, the adjustments in the second half for the defense, for the Packers defense, it seemed to me to be a lot more about just the front 7 of the Packers having seen what the Texans were doing that day and them just physically destroying it because they anticipated it better in the second half. There were just multiple instances of defensive linemen looking at the formation, teeing off. You want to block me with Cade Stover? No, go die. Right. That's what I told you last week would happen, is that all these nice little whams and traps and everything, they're fun as a mix-up.
Yep.
But ultimately, once defensive linemen start anticipating it, they beat the crap out of smaller human beings trying to block them.
Yep.
And then when your offensive linemen are also getting the crap beat out of them, the running game falls and sputters and fails. And in the they were physically beaten and whipped by a superior football players on the defense.
And here's some of the danger, and we're about to play a play here that really on the play sheet was a throwaway play because it was on a drive that ended with nothing. It ended with another Texans punt. they got the ball in the early in the fourth quarter with a chance to go down and maybe either make it more than a they got a chance to go down there, make it either take the lead 22-21, which ultimately they did on the subsequent possession, or maybe go get a touchdown. But the fact that you can't move the football on the ground in the second half with Joe Mixon anymore, and B, that sometimes C.J. Stroud has no choice but to get flushed out of the pocket, and yesterday felt the need later on in the game to scramble on his own. Here was C.J. picking up what at the time was a key first down.
Second down and 9. Stroud shotgun, one back. They get right to the line. C.J. takes the snap. Looking. Stepping up. He's going to run again. Angling left. 35 to the sideline, and he takes it across the 40. Took a shot as he picked up the first down at the 43.
I mean, they're in first and 15, which Seth yesterday probably felt like first and 30 given the passing game. So how did they get that first down? CJ scrambles for 6, and then CJ gets his head taken off scrambling for 10 yesterday.
Right, and I think some of that, though, too, on those, the pass protection was okay on those scrambles. Yeah. It's just there was nothing for him downfield. Yeah. This is where, at some point, the quarterback also has to take responsibility for pass protection, has to take responsibility for what you're doing versus the blitz. People keep saying, why don't they just run more screens if the blitz is an issue? They run screens. They suck at it. They're awful at it. They can't do it.
Nope.
The defense sees it coming a mile away. That comes down to execution. Some of the pass protection issues. And then sometimes just CJ taking the easier receptions, getting rid of the ball quickly.
Yeah.
I think there's room for improvement there. Mm-hmm. It's just it's a mangled mess offensively.
Yep. Last one we'll play here, then we'll start acknowledging people. From the weekend, this is a play that if they had gone on to win this game, it would have been one of the key plays. You know, it would have been a play that we're talking about maybe more than we are than just this throwaway here. But I do want to acknowledge it in this segment only because it was good to see, like, CJ, despite having the worst statistical day of his career and probably honestly the worst day just in terms of him being chased all over the field. And he's had a lot of ones where he's been chased all over. This one was bad. This pass to Xavier Hutchinson to keep that drive alive. 3rd and 10 at the Green Bay 23. Now, the Texans were in field goal range, so there were 2 minutes and 42 seconds left. So, ultimately, they wound up kicking a field goal anyways because it felt like that's what they preferred to do. But they kept the drive alive here. C.J. Stroud rolling to his right and leaning backwards throws an absolute laser. It reminded me of the Nico Collins 3rd and 11 play in week 1 against the Colts, and hits a sliding, diving Xavier Hutchinson to keep the drive alive.
3rd down and 10 at the 23-yard line of Green Bay. CJ in the gun, Dare in the backfield. All-out blitz. Stroud in trouble. Scrambling to his right. Throws right sideline and caught! What a catch! Xavier Hutchinson diving for the first down reception at the 12-yard line. The play of the game!
It was. To that point, Vandy nailed it. It was the play of the game to that point. Now it gets lost in the shuffle because from there, literally, the next play, they ran it down to the 2-minute warning after that play. And from there, it just turned into one massive collective team brain fart after that. Like that Hutchinson play may as well have been a $1,000 bill that you proceeded to light on fire after the 2-minute warning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was just so frustrating. So frustrating.
I guess just by way of illustration, we've always said, all right, you're a good rushing attack if you can run the ball when you need to run the ball.
Yes.
Right? So that final drive, which yielded a field goal, and yet when you got down into the red zone and you're trying to run the ball and eat up clock, yeah, you're thinking, yeah, the first half we did this, and Joe Mixon was really good running the ball in the red zone. On that final drive, here are Joe Mixon's runs. 1 yard, 4 yards, ooh, -1. Then he had a 12-yarder,
yep.
-1, yeah. -2, yeah. -3.
Yeah.
Like, his final three carries of the game were for negative yardage.
Like, half
it was
the
just the absolute epitome of not running the ball when you really need to run the ball.
Yeah, yeah, it was. There was so much stuff in this game that was just such a microcosm of what this offensive line is right now. So coming out of the 2-minute warning, they run Joe Mixon up the middle, and it's -2 yards. Green Bay burns their first timeout. Next, so there's 1:56 left. Next play, they run it up the middle, left guard, Joe Mixon, minus 3 yards. It's 3rd and 15. Green Bay
that
burns.
That one, both Kenyon Green and Titus Howard got destroyed by their individual defensive linemen. That wasn't a fancy look or anything. That was just, it was well blocked except for the two guys who got destroyed.
Green Bay burns their second timeout. There's a minute 52 left now. So logic would dictate, like, okay, we've got them to burn their two timeouts. Let's at least make sure they burn their third timeout. And now they've at least got to operate once we kick this field goal here. After we run it up the middle again, or, you know, do something conservative that keeps the clock moving, a screen maybe. I mean, you know what you're really good at? Getting tackled 2 yards in the backfield on a screen. That would have kept the clock moving. More so than the play you chose to run or the pass you chose to throw, CJ, which was an incomplete pass to Tank Dell along the right sideline where if he catches it, he slides out of bounds and it's 4th and 7. And you're still kicking a field goal. Like, you ran a play on a drive where, after the 2 minute warning, you run two plays that burn the two of the three timeouts the Packers have left, as opposed to just getting the, you know, kind of the, okay, the settling for the consolation prize, which is make them burn all their timeouts and let's kick a field goal. You run a play where 99% of the outcomes are stopping the clock.
Right, and I mean, the DB was up at the line. I don't know if CJ was anticipating him bailing out or something, but based on the coverage they got, that was the route they ran, and that was so. I don't need to hear Bobby Slowick say, "Well, there was a miscommunication, or we should have done this, or we should have done that." This is multiple times now where you've burned yourself with throwing the intentional grounding from a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was, you know, when they either should have run the ball or at the very least run something. Oh, well, there was a miscommunication on the route. No, there's no excuse for that.
No. Nope.
I don't want to hear about the reasons things went wrong when you put them in peril's way.
Yeah.
You're playing the game of eating a clock. Even as you're getting destroyed in the run game, you're playing the game of eating a clock, and then all of a sudden you abandon your strategy.
Well,
Sean, they abandoned their chosen strategy there at a time where they're just trying to get Green Bay to use their timeout.
Totally, dude. Totally. And even if coming out of the 2 minute warning, part of the conversation was, hey, let's keep the clock moving and at least get them to burn their three timeouts and run three conservative plays. You know, you're probably not getting a first down. You're probably kicking a field goal with Kaimi there. You know, whatever it ended up being, 35. It was a 35-yard field goal. I would submit that that's too early to have burning their timeouts be a primary goal. Like, they're still, at that point, if they burn their third timeout and you kick a field goal, they're still getting the ball back with like a minute 40 to go. And then your strategy at that point on the ensuing kickoff was kicking the ball out of the end zone, which gives them the ball at the 30 and burns no clock. So they've got like a minute 40 to get 35 or 40 yards and get in field goal range. A good NFL offense doesn't need timeouts to move the ball 40 yards in a minute and a half.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, bad day. Bad day for D'Amico, the game manager, yesterday, man. I hate to see it. All right.
It's just everything feels bad offensively right now.
Yeah.
In so many ways, including that, even without, I thought that with Nico out, there would still be more opportunities downfield.
Dude.
Where there just there aren't. Either that or just the pressure is getting there too quickly for it to develop.
Yeah.
But even on the plays where CJ does have time, teams can just sit back and take it away and play coverage, and there you go.
Let's start acknowledging people, because that's actually a good place to start, Seth, when you lay it out that way. We acknowledge every Monday big performances from over the weekend, or people in this case that were big performers early in the year that we just missed. But as you're saying that, I feel like we need to acknowledge Nico Collins.
Acknowledge me!
We're going to acknowledge you, Nico, because we miss you tremendously right now. And we're praying for you and your hamstring, and we're praying for you to get well soon. Really soon. Like, by the Detroit game in Week 10 soon. We know by rule you can't come back for the Colts game this week, which really sucks, Nico, if you're listening right now, because you're amazing against the Colts every time, it seems like. Since CJ got here. But just be well by the time you're, by rule, allowed to come back, which is the Detroit game, because I can't watch much more Nico Collins-less football with this team right now, Seth.
No.
Bad watch.
Well, we were saying the same thing about Joe Mixon-less football. So now it just really comes back to, okay, it's Mixon-less and Nico-less.
Yeah.
We've only seen one precious real moment of those two being on the field together.
Against the Colts, and they both ate that day. Both eight.
Did Anthony Richardson break the 50% barrier
yesterday?
I
know you know the answer to this. You check that like you check your blood pressure, my man.
I believe he was 10 for 24. I have a hard time doing math in my head, but I'm pretty sure 10 ain't adding up to half.
That stat you're good on. I know. We can count on
50%.
Anthony Richardson's completion percentage. You love that he doesn't crack the 50%
barrier. Did C.J. Stroud complete more than 50%?
He did not yesterday, actually.
No, he did not.
We're in the glassiest of glass houses this weekend for sure.
Yeah.
Let's acknowledge Joe Mixon while we're talking about him. He was great yesterday. He got 115 yards on 25 carries. Feel like a lot of it is Joe Mixon. You know, I can't wait to see how much of that was after contact. He runs. He got two touchdowns too, including this one right here.
Mixon in the backfield. Stroud under center. First and goal at the 4. Motion by Dell to the right. Hand off Mixon starting left and taking it straight ahead for the touchdown. Joe Mixon, his second of the day.
Yeah, there you go, man. Mixon.
A lot better in the first half than the second half. And a lot of plays, I was just kind of going through real quickly this morning on the All-22 and checking off, you know, like, okay, plus or minus on the offensive line, on the blocks, on the run plays.
Yeah.
And there were a lot more pluses in the first half.
Yeah.
In the second half, started to be a lot more minuses. Kenyon Green's name is jotted down, scribbled down quite a few times. They all take their share. Titus Howard at one point. You know, Stephon Diggs at one point on one of those goal line runs. It was on Stephon Diggs, but going back to what Romo was saying during the game, these condensed formations where you're asking wide receivers and tight ends to block much larger human beings doesn't always work out that well unless you got some genuinely ferocious George Kittle types, and they don't. They don't have a George Kittle type.
Let me ask you this.
Tight end.
I mean, let me ask you this. I mean, look, if you're playing behind somebody on this offensive line, you're a reserve.
Yeah.
There's probably an indication as to maybe where you are in the league or whatever. And this is not meant out of disrespect. This is just, you know, reserves are reserves, starters are starters. Do you think we see any sort of mixing and matching on the O-line this week after that performance? Like, hey, Jarrett Patterson at left guard running with the ones at practice this week.
Right. Can we say, could it be any worse?
Yeah, right.
Right.
We'll be back.
Could it be any worse if we just put Jarrett Patterson there?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. You think we see that? You think we see that this week?
No.
I don't either. I
like that. It's just that my favorite thing to watch on the Texans offense when they try to run the ball is the various guys who are pulling but are kind of like tiptoeing around like they're cat burglars, like trying to figure out exactly, which door should I enter next?
Right.
Hey, why are you on the ground, CJ?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Hey, Joe Mixon, why didn't you run? Why didn't you? Wait, just give me a minute, Joe. I got to figure out who I'm going to block here.
Yeah.
Nah, that guy looks. No, I'm going to go with this guy. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Brutal. Neville Hewitt.
Acknowledge me.
We don't need to play the highlight, Ben. We just played it in the previous segment. But Neville Hewitt, I thought, other than the back suplex, the belly-to-back suplex that he did on that one guy to keep a drive alive, it would have been like 3rd and 10, and Neville Hewitt decides, I'm just going to pick this guy up and drop him on his head and pick up a 15-yard penalty. Other than that, I thought Neville Hewitt had a pretty good day yesterday.
I thought even with that, I went back to wrestling rules here, like actual wrestling rules, you know, Olympic-style wrestling.
Yeah.
That was, now, in wrestling, if he had genuinely slammed him, it wouldn't have counted, but he actually got some loft, exposed his back, and then let him go.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, the player didn't actually get slammed.
Right.
I felt like Neville Hewitt was flagged for magnificence there, more so than any actual violence, because he let him go after he had, after he had completed.
But you're not allowed to pick him up, Seth. You're not allowed to by rule.
But you're not allowed to pick him up and slam him. He picked him up and then let him go. Go watch the play again. He doesn't actually hit the ground all that hard.
He landed right on his shoulder.
But not his head.
No, that's true.
That is a 5-point throw, high-amplitude
throw. It
was
a concussion-friendly suplex by Neville Hewitt.
Yes.
You're right. I'm going to acknowledge him again. And
screw
the refs.
Me.
Yeah. Hey, let's get to some of these other ones that are.
And
kind of
listen, fun. In amateur wrestling, it's a souplet.
Yeah,
okay?
It's a souplet.
So like that, and that was a souplet, a suplex. Yeah, you're trying to slam them onto the canvas in the middle of the pro wrestling ring.
Yeah,
that was a souplet.
Right. Saquon Barkley.
Acknowledge me.
17 carries, 176 yards, and this touchdown right here.
Hurts. Calling for the ball. Hurts. Gives it to Barkley. He pushes. He shoves. He is into the end zone. Touchdown! His fifth rushing touchdown of the season.
Now, why am I acknowledging Saquon Barkley? He had a hell of a day. I mean, that's one reason to acknowledge. Why on this particular Monday, I'm acknowledging Saquon Barkley because that performance was in a 28-3 Eagles win over his former team, the New York Giants. And I can only imagine how this guy is feeling today. These two guys, actually, but particularly the one that sounds like this in this cut.
What's the latest?
Just on the Saquon thing.
I just got a text that Chicago's driving the price up and Philly's out. I don't know if that's true or not.
Hmm.
Which I don't know if that, I'll make a couple of calls. I don't even know if that's gonna happen, but
I'm gonna have a tough time sleeping if Saquon goes to Philadelphia. I'll tell you that, as I've told you, just being out. I've been around enough players, so, but he's the most popular player we have by far.
Yeah.
10 yards of carry in his return to MetLife Stadium.
It's like the whole, do you think anybody has told Mora yet that Joe Shane made a fool of him during Hard Knocks? Do you think he's been clued in on that yet?
I hope so.
That Joe Shane spent that entire season of off-season Hard Knocks basically double-talking and trying to gaslight everybody in the building to thinking that nobody would actually want Saquon. Nobody would even want him, really? Like, who's going to actually... Who really wants a... Certainly not the Eagles. He says that in one of the meetings.
Yeah.
Why would the Eagles go for Saquon Barkley? You know, it just... There's no way. There's no way that you can let him keep his job. He publicly cuckolded you.
Yeah.
In front of the world.
Yeah.
At least the HBO audience.
The more you listen to it, that whole, Chicago's driving the price up and Eagles are out, that's what I'm hearing on my... But that was get out of my office, old man. That's what that was. What's going to get him out of here fastest?
I mean, and that's when you're the billionaire who's paying a guy millions of dollars to do his job. Yeah. You don't want to be... just don't make it so public that you're just trying to pull the wool over my eyes and sucking at doing it as well.
Yep.
You know?
Sunday Night Football last night, a game you could hear on Sports Radio 610. The Steelers beat up on the Jets. The Jets jumped out to a 15-3 lead in this game, and the Steelers went on to score 34 unanswered points by my math. 37-15, the final score. I can't bring myself to acknowledge Russell Wilson, even though he threw this touchdown to George Pickens.
Wilson gets the snap, back to pass, throws a fade, right corner of the end zone. Pickens is there, makes the catch, touchdown Steelers. An 11-yard touchdown from Russell Wilson to George Pickens.
Yep.
The first touchdown catch of the year for Pickens, and the Steelers have pulled within three.
Okay, so there you go. That was Pickens is so talented, man. He's such a head case, though. I can't acknowledge Russell Wilson, Seth. I will acknowledge Mike Tomlin, though.
Acknowledge me!
He got a lot of heat for switching to Russ. You know, you're 4-2. Justin Fields is doing something. He's not the greatest passer in the world. And maybe George Pickens is going to have a nervous breakdown by the bye week at some point here because he's not getting the ball. He's painting stuff on his eye black to, hey, I'm open, that kind of stuff. But you're winning football games with Justin. This is the first time a 4-2 team has benched a quarterback.
Yeah.
It might have been the right move, man. Russell Wilson, 264 yards passing and two touchdowns last night.
I couldn't watch a lot of this game. I was getting ready for KHOU Sports Extra every Sunday night.
Yep.
Around about 10:30 or so. The gist I got from following on social media was that Russell Wilson had some really well-chosen, poorly thrown footballs
it wasn't great.
You can call them back. It's always funny with a back shoulder or underthrown ball, whether people whether they want to credit the guy with actually making a good play or whether it's just, oh, this quarterback is getting bailed out by George Pickens.
Yeah, they, right, where they're getting bailed. Well, and the defense put them in some really good spots in this game.
Yeah.
Beanie Bishop, the rookie safety, had a couple of picks in this game, including one. He had one that was, should have been a pick six. He got tackled at the 1 yard line.
Yeah.
So the defense turning Aaron Rodgers and the Jets over. By the way, Devontae Adams in his Jet debut, 3 catches, 30 yards on 9 targets. So 3 of 9 for 30 yards, throwing the ball in old DA's direction last night.
There are things that even though the Steelers were winning, I try to look at this from the coach's perspective. I mean, I'm guessing there's a lot of things that they feel they could be doing that they can't do with Justin Fields just because of Russell Wilson's experience and what have you.
Yep.
And, I mean, you go back to, various other quarterback decisions. When they benched Alex Smith for Colin Kaepernick, Alex Smith was playing pretty well, but there were some things that Colin Kaepernick could do physically that Alex Smith couldn't do with his arm, just his ability to threaten deep. It's a lot easier to be, you know, philosophical about it right now after a victory, but I understand the appeal of a Russell Wilson despite him not having played good football for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it worked, and I'll give Russ credit. In the post game, I think it's Melissa Stark who's the sideline reporter for NBC, I think. I'm not totally sure. But whoever it was tried to
it's
get
either, it's either her or Craig Sager. It's one of those two. R. I. I confuse P. them a lot.
R.I.P. Yeah. Craig Sager.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's definitely not Craig Sager.
No.
Yeah.
Whoever it was tried to get him to say his new Steeler catchphrase, win the seventh. He wouldn't do it. He said, we'll save that for later in the year. Good job, Russ. Don't be baited into that.
Sounds to me like the trademark hasn't gone through yet. He wants to be sure everything gets approved.
It's held up in legal right now.
Kind of a long process, yeah.
All right, last one. And we're giving away some U of H Utah tickets here in a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. We're giving away a 4-pack of tickets. I'd like to acknowledge Satan.
Acknowledge me!
He got the World Series he wanted. Satan got the World Series he wanted. The Yankees and the Dodgers. Satan got his wish.
It's good to acknowledge Satan.
I got to acknowledge Satan. He wanted this World Series in the worst way, and he got what he wanted. When Satan wants, Satan gets, and he got the Yankees versus the Dodgers. Who are we rooting for in Yankees-Dodgers, Seth?
Oh, this is difficult. Yeah. I'm going to have to think on this. This is going to be harder than the Circle of Swarm. This week, I'll give you my answer. When's the first game?
Good question. I think tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Yeah. I'll give you my answer.
I think it might be Thursday.
Morning.
I think it might be Thursday. So you get.
I'm going to delay as long as possible. Okay. If it's Thursday, I'll wait until Thursday morning.
9:59 on Thursday. That's when you're going to. It doesn't. I don't even have a calendar yet. So yeah, I'm not sure when the first game is. Largely because I hate these two teams. I do not plan on watching this World Series, if at all. Like maybe corner of my eye, if at all. I'm rooting for the Yankees. I rooted for the Yankees against the Guardians already, so rooting for the Yankees is something I've already kind of stretched my hammies out doing.
You've already popped that memory.
I hate the Dodgers. I said last week, the one outcome with these four teams left, Guardians, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, the one outcome I cannot have is the Dodgers winning the World Series. I need their only World Series since Kirk Gibson to be a COVID asterisk World Series. And their fans are worse than Yankee fans to me. Yankee fans are just garden variety obnoxious. Dodger fans are a bunch of crybabies. And by the way, crybabies that a lot of them like to beat people up at Chavez Ravine with weapons.
Yeah, they're big men when they've got a knife and you don't.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I will say this.
I watch a lot of TikTok videos on how to defend myself against knife attackers.
Yeah.
And almost all of them are BS, you can tell. from what I can tell, the best way to take on somebody who has a knife is to just accept that you're going to get stabbed at
right.
least once.
Try to call 911.
You got to be sure it's a non-lethal blow.
Right. Just give me right here. Just a flesh wound.
I mean, unless you really know what you're doing.
No vital organs.
I'm just
going
to go down and do self-defense at the Y. That crap ain't flying.
Yeah. Jets and the Mets lost on the same night, so that's kind of cool. That was kind of good. I'll acknowledge the sports gods for that one real quick. Thanks.
Acknowledge me!
Jets and Mets fans, I think, are the crossovers. Giants-Yankees on the one hand and Jets and Mets on the other. They both lost last night, so that was kind of cool. Let's give away the tickets. U of H in Utah, 713-572-4610. Call now. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack of tickets. It's the Cougs and the Utes on Saturday, 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a 4-pack of tickets to see the Cougs play Utah. It's Saturday, 6 p.m. Weather going to be awesome. We're doing this all week long, so keep listening for your chance to win here on Sports Radio 610. All right, up next, final segment. We'll hand things over to John Harrison, Mark Vandermeer on Texans Monday at the top of the hour. We got Texans-Colts now. This game is a whole lot more meaningful after yesterday than it looked a couple of weeks ago. How meaningful? We'll lay it out for you coming up next.
The Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast. Good text here.
Oh.
And, it lays out, I think, where we're at. The topic on the station today, I'm sure, both in the next couple hours with Texans Monday, as well as in the loop, in the drive, and no Area 45 tonight because it's Monday Night Football. But the Packers and the Texans and rehashing everything that happened yesterday will be the big topic yesterday. There are plenty of angles to continue to dig into with this, but this loss yesterday combined with a win by the Colts over a very undermanned Dolphins team, at least at quarterback right now, has set up I would say the biggest Colts-Texans game at NRG Stadium since these two teams met in the 2018 postseason in the Colts with Andrew Luck about eight quarterbacks ago for the Colts beat Deshaun Watson,
yeah,
recently injured and out for the season with the Browns, beat the Texans 21-7, I believe, was the score that day against the Texans. This is the biggest game between these two teams at NRG Stadium in about 6 years, and I think a texter sums it up perfectly here. So this game against the Colts this week is essentially the difference between a virtual tie with both teams being 5-3 or the Texans having a de facto three-game lead in the division, because if they win,
yeah,
they'll be 6-2, the Colts will be 4-4, but the Texans will have won both of the games against the Colts. Honestly, this is as close as you can get to a week 8 potential division clincher for the Texans. You know what I mean? Like, and I know what happened last year. They're probably saying the same thing in Jacksonville about the Texans game in week 12, where they beat the Texans to go to 8-3, and the Texans were 6-5, and the Jags had that win over them here at NRG Stadium. They're probably saying the same thing, and now I'm saying it with more than half the season to go. I'm just talking about the math. And the fact of the matter is, the Texans, as angry as we are today, they are 5-2 with four games left in the division that they are going to be fairly significant favorites in if things continue to hold up, even with this bad offensive line. They're a 6-point favorite against the Colts. They should win this game at home this weekend. Bad offensive line or no bad offensive line. This is a big game, man. This is a game that has a lot of juice.
It's a huge game. No, and honestly, if I had to put the Texans into a tier right now, mm-hmm, I won't do quartiles. Let's say it was five tiers in the NFL.
Okay.
I think there's still smack dab in the second tier.
I agree.
And including the game yesterday against another second-tier team in the Green Bay Packers.
Agreed.
So they're certainly not up in the Vikings or Ravens or any of that category of game, yeah, or team. But they're up there, but they're very clearly stuck there without that getting into that next gear.
Yeah.
At some point, whether it's return to health of Nico Collins and a bunch of the defensive starters or whatever it might be as simple as that, but they haven't demonstrated enough of the things they need to do versus really good teams. And I'm including the Bills game in that, too. There's a reason the Bills went out and got Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
So that's where they are. And but if you lose to the Colts, you're not a Tier 2 team anymore.
No, you're not.
Now you're right there smack dab at 3. It's a big game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, no question about it. It's a huge game. Of all the football I've been watching, Seth, over the last few weeks, because this is always – how good you are is as much a snapshot of the last few weeks as it is your body of work for the whole season, you know?
Yeah.
It's in terms of what are you right now. The teams that I watch that I feel like the Texans would just get overwhelmed by right now, off the top of my head, if you played them on a neutral field, certainly if you played them on their home field, are the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Lions, and the Vikings. It's those teams.
Offense versus that Chiefs defense. Yeah. Don't even talk to me about Pat Mahomes. It would be a nightmare, I think. The team that showed up yesterday,
yeah,
would have gotten throat punched by, yes, the Chiefs defense.
And yeah, I think you'd get throat punched by the Ravens offense right now. Even though the Texans defense has played very well, until I see them defend Lamar Jackson effectively with Derrick Henry next to him now.
Yeah. It would be really, really bad. Derrick Henry would get 200 yards rushing.
And it'd be bad on both sides of the ball. I think it would look a lot like the playoff game last year. So Chiefs, Ravens, the Lions are a very good football team right now, and the Vikings are a very good football team right now. Mm-hmm. You've already been beaten by the Vikings. Man, that Lions game on Sunday Night Football, I don't even want to think about that right now.
Look, I don't want to do the whole college football playoff thing, but in terms of just common opponents and what have you, both the Packers and the Texans got absolutely throttled by the Vikings. I know the final score looks like it was a close game between the Packers and the Vikings. No, the Vikings destroyed the Packers. So the Vikings are a whole different category right now than either of the Packers or the Texans.
Yep. Interesting question on the text page. Do you think the Packers gave the blueprint on how to expose our offense?
This is the problem. This is the problem. A lot of the things that were given the Texans issues yesterday were the exact same things that the Colts were doing in week one.
Yes.
Some of these overload looks that they show, that where you got three defensive linemen on one side, it throws the Texans into such disarray in their pass protection, and they don't know what they're doing. On one play, it was either Dari Ogunbowale or Laramie Tunsil who really screwed up bad mentally. This was an annoying one because I put it out there and I said one of two. This, you know how it goes. I talked to my offensive line consortium.
Yeah.
And they'll always say, like, people. Well, it could have been one of two or one of three things. Mm-hmm. It was one of those two guys. There were a lot of people who were like, no, clearly, Seth, this is what was happening. No. They versus this look that they saw yesterday from – that's been giving them issues since week one, they still look like they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They still look completely lost and hopeless.
The Packers, the only thing the Packers gave in terms of a blueprint was the fact that you can bang on that button literally every play if you want to. You don't have to be selective about doing any of these things. Just do them. They can't defend them right now.
It's really a lot of the cute stuff that worked last week versus the Patriots. Once the Packers realized, oh, okay, I see what you're doing here. Yeah. Oh, you think you're going to run a counter, do you? Yeah, you're cute.
Yeah.
And then I kick you in the face.
Yep.
That's what the Packers defense did in the second half.
Toss us.
They physically manhandled offensive linemen and tight ends and wide. Like anybody who was trying to block was just getting physically manhandled.
I'll toss this final little grenade right into the everybody is critical of Bobby Slowick room right now on the way out.
Yeah.
The Texans have scored 6 touchdowns in the second half of football games this year. They played 7 games. They've scored 6 second-half touchdowns. 2 of them came in week 1 against the Colts. 2 of them came last week against the Patriots. In the other 5 games, they've scored 2 second-half touchdowns. 2. It's a miracle they're 5-2 right now, in a way. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No, well, it really is. I mean, no, it goes to almost every game this year other than last week. It was one where it was either a nail-biter or it shouldn't have been a nail-biter. As we've been saying all along, even after victories, they're just clearly not firing on all cylinders.
They're not, they got to fix it, or it's going to be, at best, they're topping out where they were last year, at best.
And they're good enough on paper that, this gets coordinators fired.
Yep.
You know?
It does.
It might be D'Amico's first really, really hard decision is that you got to move in a different direction.
That's a great topic. We'll save that. We may put a pin in that one for tomorrow. Seth, antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies to you as well.
Thank you very, very much. We will see all of you tomorrow at 6 a.m. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer are up next.